You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hello, and welcome to another fabulous episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. My name is Michael Kushner, and Happy New Year! It is 2022. How incredible is that? I know 2020 and 2021 were hard, but we got a lot of really great things done in those years. We have to be proud of ourselves. We're surviving a pandemic, and I know it's easy to get discouraged by all the memes on Instagram and TikTok and see that, you know, the past years were super difficult, but we also have to be proud of ourselves. We're still standing, we're still creating, you're still doing things for your career. I mean, you're listening to this podcast. Why else would you listen to this podcast? I wouldn't listen to this podcast if I wasn't trying to make my career better. Okay, that's not a great sell. What a great way to start out this podcast of 2022, but we're all about honesty here, right? And oh gosh. Okay, so just a few things to catch you up on before we start the episode officially. Thanks for your patience. I took the month off of recording or releasing an episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. I needed it. As much as I love doing this podcast, it is time consuming and it does require a lot of my focus. And at the Green Room 42, we were navigating putting up shows in the middle of a pandemic, and I think we did it pretty well. I'm proud of us and the team at Green Room 42 continuing theater making in a really, really safe way as we, as New York City got hit over the head with Omicron. Omicron, you guys, it was difficult, but we did it, and long live theater. Am I right? Dear Multi-Hyphenate, the book version, How to Be a Multi-Hyphenate in the Theater Business, is starting to hit its design element stage, which I'm really, really excited about. So more information on that. Again, my book that I wrote in 2021 is being published with Routledge Publishing, and I'm so excited to share it with you. Other than that, I think it's time to start the show. I hope you're all happy and healthy, and you're having a great start to your new year. I'm so glad that you're joining us, and I love you all. Thanks so much for listening, and of course, as always, subscribe, comment, rate, tell your friends, tell your family. Follow on Instagram at Dear Multi-Hyphenate, or you could, if you want to be on the podcast, you could submit your story at DearMultiHyphenate.com, which is pretty much the hub for all Dear Multi-Hyphenate stuff. That being said, I am so excited to start this episode with one of my best friends. He was my sophomore year roommate, and we had such a great time living with each other. He is chock full of incredible information and insight and facts and figures, and he's just a mush, and I love him. Josh Johnston is an actor, writer, producer, and director. On stage, Josh toured with the Acting Company in their 40th season, directed by John Rando. He has worked regionally, including the Ravinia Festival, where he's done shows like Passion and A Little Night Music and Annie Get Your Gun, which was all directed by the incredible Lonnie Price. He's now based in L.A., where he's begun pursuing work in TV and film, and most recently played a supporting role in the film To Leslie, which was in post-production and directed by Michael Morris. Now, he's coming on the podcast today to talk about all things multi-hyphenating, but his newest project, Radio Play Revival, is super exciting and includes legends like Samuel L. Jackson, Jessica Chastain, Boyd Gaines, and more to be announced. Josh Johnston's Radio Play Revival features great American actors performing great American works of literature. Performed by both established and new and emerging performers, musicians, and writers, Radio Play Revival pays homage to the golden age of radio in the now second golden age of audio. I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening. Here's Josh Johnston. I am so excited because I have one of my very best friends. I'm recording in person. I think this is the first in-person recording I've done in a while, maybe in a year and a half, pre-pandemic. But one of my very best buds, Josh Johnston, how are you?
I'm very, very good and happy to be here. And we're recording in 2021. So if you're listening in 2022... against all odds, we made it.
We hope we did.
Yeah, exactly.
We still have New Year's to
we
get
have
to,
three so. Days to go.
Knock on fucking wood.
Yeah.
How's your morning? How is 2021 for you? If you could, well, first of all, because you're Dear Multi-Hyphenate's biggest fan, we have two things to
super
get
fan. I'm wearing my t-shirt. Thanks for the bucket hat.
Yeah, you will literally like text me and be like, so in this episode, I'm like, Josh, why are you listening? Like, you get a free pass, but he's like, no, he actually listens and it makes my heart flutter in every single way. So I'm going to give him the full Dear Multi-Hyphenate experience. And that is, one, a quote. And that quote is, I'm becoming a professional nomad and enjoying that whole part of my life. And that is said by songwriter Dar Williams. And I wanted to know what that makes you, what you think about when you hear something like that, because I have thoughts as well.
I don't think you can be a creative and not explore everywhere in the world.
Right.
It's, I am a nomad myself, and it has unleashed so many creative thoughts, musings, ideas, perspectives on my life and the shape of this country and the shape of the world and the shape of my place in all of it in this particular time.
The shape of water
yes. my relationship with water beasts, yes. No, I think it's very important to explore and be nomadic a bit. It's, we are going back to our roots as mm-hmm. well. We all descend from nomadic people mm-hmm. and there is something primal in that mm-hmm. and in an age of technology and glowing rectangles and digital handcuffs that we're attached to, it's good to go back to our primal instincts.
Since I've known you, which was, you were my sophomore year roommate in college, and I say to this day, and I don't care if my boyfriend's listening.
October 3rd, 2009 is when we met, but yeah, go on.
Was it really October 3rd?
Yeah.
You and frickin' Gates, you have that brain.
It was raining, but yeah.
It was, I feel like it was raining. I do remember that. But when was it not raining?
Exactly.
But we were sophomore year roommates, and I know my boyfriend is listening, but you were the best person I've ever lived with. You just, you emulate and promote respect and boundaries and also fun. Like, you were just like, you were always ready to have a good time, and you always were like, you know, this is my work time, and then as soon as I'm done, like, you were just the best person to work with. Plus, our dorm room was, like, the cleanest ever.
Yes, I've been told I have serial killer-like tendencies when it comes to cleanness.
But, ironically, I felt the most safe I've ever felt in my life.
Right. Yes.
But the thing is, speaking of those boundaries, is that you will always shut off when you need to. You will always say, okay, door's closed, I'm on my own. And you're the only friend that I truthfully will be like, I'll hear from him when he's in a place to communicate and he's, you know, when he's done taking care of himself. And I respect that so much because I don't have that at all. And I think as multi-hyphenates, that is one of the biggest things that we have to have, because we have so many different people wanting things from us. And when we put ourselves out that much, people expect us to deliver at all times, but we have to protect ourselves. And I feel like that's such a quality that I don't know where you got it from.
I didn't. It came to me. I've never always had it. It came from learning about myself. But I thank you for understanding that about me, because it's a big ask to say, I'll talk to you when I talk to you. But sometimes I think we all need that space to just sort of decompress or find our zen. I don't do yoga, and I don't meditate. So mine is just getting away from the phone and popping back into people's lives when I'm around. And it's a big ask for a friend to just be cool with that. But I like wiping my feet at the door. I don't like constantly being on and having to go to sleep and wake up with my thoughts on what I need to do to survive and be creative every day. So I'm grateful that you have the patience for me to just sort of disappear for 6 months. And I'm grateful that we can just pick up a conversation. I believe in 2020, in November, when we spoke for the first time, it was the first time since you were sick in February of 2020. I mean, that's math guy over here. 9 months. That's a full pregnancy right there that we hadn't spoken.
I gave birth to a full COVID long hauler baby. I think I remember, well, you're good with dates, I'm good with images. And I remember I was laying on the couch FaceTiming you, because I think my long hauler stuff was weird. I didn't know I was a long hauler, still experiencing chronic COVID syndrome, which I just learned is what they're calling it officially, until a month after I was doing an at-home workout. I was sick in March, and then April I was trying to do an at-home workout, and I thought I was going to die. I was in the gym 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. So a dinky at-home workout is going to be nothing. And then I couldn't breathe at all. And I was like, okay, this I don't know is good. And nothing has changed since then. But I think finally by the time that we had FaceTime, I was like, I'm not feeling good.
Jesus, yeah.
It blows. But anyway, that is something that I wish that I could have from you, because I am recording in this moment. I do have I've never been this way in the industry, and I'm all about working through my things and delivering to people that are listening at like day to day issues and problems and discoveries and positive things, positive musings that I have on a day to day basis, because that's the realest thing. And right now in this moment, as I close out this year, the hardest thing that I'm dealing with is, and I thought I had such a good grasp on them, is boundaries, because I'm waking up in my current work situation. And I mean that as a whole, overall, as a multi-hyphenate, all the projects that I'm taking on, I've never experienced this before, but I am sort of waking up in this cold sweat panic, constantly checking my phone, sleepless nights. And I think in order for me to get to over that hump, I have to take a lesson from you and sort of go, this is my time. This is what I'm going to need to focus on my projects and on my artistry and on my relationship with you. I'm going to need this week off, or I'm going to need this month off, or something like that. And then I can recalibrate, because every time I'm with you after you do have that moment to yourself where you're driving across country or you're out in LA, which we'll get to, whatever it is, there's so much to talk about. There's so much to connect on too. There's so much life that has happened. And it's like texting and FaceTiming and calling every day is a very new thing in our society. You know, we used to write letters to each other or catch up over dinner or things like that. And you still bring that to the forefront, that there's relationships marinate with you.
That comes from growing up in the woods of Connecticut, basically, where there to this day in 2022 is no cell service.
Right.
And so when you tell a friend at 10 years old, my dad will drop me off at your place at 3:30. Or when you say at 27 years old, I'll meet you there at 3:30. If you don't show up, you know, clear your date for the funeral. We're going to show up. And that's very important in my life and the friends I have from childhood's lives as well. You know, I'm stressed now too, but there are moments in my day where I say, okay, cross off what you need to do today, and if it's not done, it's not the end of the world.
So, since you were a hockey player and you felt connected to sports and still do, was that a way that influenced your artistry at all? Or was it just something, because what I talk about on the podcast a lot and something I talk to you about is what defines a multi-hyphenate. And it's an artist who has multiple proficiencies that cross-pollinate to help flourish professional capabilities. And with some people, the way that they approach sports is artistry. Who am I to decide what is art? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So would you say that was a part of your hyphen? Would you say that was a part of your artistry, or it was just something on the side that got you out of the theater and you didn't have to think about the industry for a while?
A little bit of everything, I think. I've played just about every sport except for American football under the sun. And it's a great way to trick my body into working out without, like, working out.
Sure.
So I'm staying in shape. I'm keeping the body healthy and mm-hmm. active. Not flexible, but at least active. So there's that aspect to the multi-hyphenate part of being creative. There's also a discipline that comes from it. What I do these days is I backpack a lot. I'll backpack for about 60 miles off trail in most recently in Yosemite. And being an athlete in that regard, whether it's with a pack on your back or whether it's with, you know, skating in a contact sport or playing softball or baseball or whatever it may be, there's a focus, there's a level of concentration there. There's often a teamwork aspect, but also there's a solo level of discipline needed to accomplish that goal. I think sports and performing go hand in hand. I really do. They're on at usually the same times of night. There's an audience that comes to applaud, and they could jeer if it's the villain.
Yeah.
There are more and more cosplayers and everything. Well, athletes have been having their jerseys worn by fans for years. It's definitely a part of my creative world. Like I said earlier, I don't do yoga. I don't meditate. It sounds ridiculous, but the way that I decompress is I get hyped up watching sports every night. Yeah. Again, wiping my feet at the door. If my day is done, then I can go enjoy something else and not have to think about it. And that's, for me, just personally for me, that's not reality TV. That's not the Cooking Network. I'm a bad student of this craft anyway. It's not winding down with a movie or a TV show. It's watching live sports. So I was very fortunate in college to be able to do both. I was not a great hockey player, but I stayed in shape. I traveled around upstate New York, over to Ohio and down to Pennsylvania, and had a wonderful, unique experience as a collegiate athlete, academic All-American, not a big deal. But anyway, I don't like talking about that. but what that lended itself to was more discipline for time management, more discipline for being a team player, more discipline for just understanding how to take care of oneself. For a while, being an athlete in both baseball and hockey was easy. And then there becomes a point where suddenly you're no longer the best player. Not even on your own team or in your own league, but sometimes even on your own line. And you have to pick up the pace. Well, as a scene partner, you have always got to be on with your scene partner. You have always got to be giving them everything. And there is that, it's like jazz. It's that moment in the moment connection with someone, where it's a head nod, or if it's just a look on stage, or if it's just a subtle gesture with your instrument or your stick or the bat, or if you're a bass runner about to steal a bass, it is a subtle moment between two people or a team or a line where you are so in sync with each other. Mm-hmm. That's exciting. So, like I said, they're very similar, sports and performing. The crossover is not so great, but I figured, you know, I still play hockey, so there's a lot of sports out there, football and baseball, not a lot of hockey content. One of my first acting jobs in New York, though, was as a featured extra on a doomed television show on IFC called Benders, where I played one of the extras on the hockey team, and it was great channeling or being able to use natural skills that I developed over my life when the director would yell action. You know, can you hit the post on this shot with the puck? Can you and this other actor collide into each other? For a shot, can you do something here? That was very exciting to do. I think most people used to make their way into the New York television world by Law and Order, by playing a dead body or by playing, you know, the criminal. Nope. I made my television debut playing an athlete, and I made my film debut playing an athlete as well. And I am quite proud of both of those, that I was not a dead body in either medium.
Talking about what you know,
yes.
It's, I think that's something that I wish that actors actually realized so much more is, you know, when I have people come in, we're recording in my photography studio. I have so many actors that come in and they think that what they have to do is just be someone else. And you should never be someone else in a headshot session or in an audition room. I guarantee you that if you were to just start doing what you know and showing up to auditions doing what you know, who you are is going to start showing up on your resume and on your website.
Isn't that the toughest thing in the world, though? I mean, it's easy in some capacities to say that and practice that, but in others, it's very difficult to do. For me personally, it's very easy to turn down an audition appointment because I can't dance. That is something I can't do. If it's for...
You could read about it in How to Be Multi-Talented.
Yeah. I can't... I can carry a tune, mm-hmm. but I cannot sing Golden Age musical theater 8 times a week.
Right.
I would be putting hundreds of people
at risk.
That's the word. That is what I was going to say, because I'm wasting their time and their money and their resources. There are better people for that job than me, and I know that. There are other things I can do, but those are not among them.
Right. And you can do a lot of good stuff. And please, you know, when I say for some people sports is an art, the way that you just talked about it is exactly what I meant, you know.
I wish people would see the correlation between the two. I mean, they are public figures. Politics could be the same way. There are a lot of professions. We seem to put a microscope on actors, on comedians, on artists, not so much in 2021, 22, but on politicians, on influencers. But there is a magnifying glass on them. They are doing nothing. They're doing nothing different than a plumber is doing on his call. Mm-hmm. He is on his own stage. He is doing his job. Mm-hmm. There's just no audience.
I think it's time we start glorifying plumbers.
Absolutely. That's there's your merch idea right there. Let's glorify plumbers.
Glorifying plumbers. I love it. And as soon as, like, that's the thing. That's what I challenge. It's like I use the trope actor knitter and roller skater, and it's like I use that trope because it's hard to find a way to combine those things to promote, you know, income and cross-pollination and how those affect the others. But if you're a plumber and an actor and a whatever, I would love to hear from you, and I would and you consider yourself a multi-hyphenate, I would love to hear from you, and I would love to know how those cross-pollinate.
That's fascinating to me. Those types of people that can do that are tradesmen, but also incredibly vulnerable in an artistic skill. That yeah. is fascinating to me. And you know, we were talking about it earlier, off mic. Which is, there's a stigma about you need to be proficient in the thing you do. Okay, yes, to a degree. I would rather be a jack of all trades mm-hmm. than a master of one. Mm-hmm. or none. You know, I would like to be proficient, more proficient with my hands. I'd like to learn how a car works or how airplanes stay up in the air. But there's always time to learn these things. And the more I can learn, it will only influence my art and my creativity. I was sore when I was not able to travel to Russia in college. The options were London and Russia. I've been to London. I grew up in London. I had not been to Moscow before. Right. That would have... the ironic thing about not being able to study abroad in college because I needed to stay in university to take more acting classes is I would have become a better actor if I had seen another culture.
Right.
Any chance you have to throw yourself into an unfamiliar situation for better or worse, I say as long as it's safe enough to do so, you have to do it. Yeah. We only go around once. Gain that perspective. There's a backpacking philosophy, you know, the three types of fun. There's type one, type two, and type three. And type one is it's fun in the moment and it's fun to talk about after. Type two is it's not fun in the moment, but it's fun to talk about afterwards. Right. And type three is it's not fun in the moment and it is not fun to talk about afterwards. I live in type two. You know, if it's an uncomfortable situation, if it is a grind, if it is a stressful situation, if it is challenging me as a person, if it's challenging the things I believe in, my core principles, in the moment, and I feel defeated, but afterwards, I can tell the story, I can recap the story to you with a smile on my face, that's type two fun.
So you grew up in the East Coast, and you did New York City for a second, and you were doing a lot of gigs, right, that sort of promote this mentality, this like... You're going to learn something from it. It's going to be fun to talk about later. So what are some of those things that you did?
I
call for now jobs.
For now jobs, yes. And some of them are for now and then a long time after. I was a waiter when I interned at the Kennedy Center for 2 days. Waiting tables and being a bartender is not something I can do. My brain, I'm stubborn by principle, and I'm hot-headed, and my brain does not work that way to balance 32 tables every night at every turnover.
Same.
So I have the utmost respect for those people.
Exactly.
That was one job, and that was the shortest job, 2 days. But the rest of the resume is quite interesting, because I knew I couldn't do that. A lot of New York jobs kind of went out the window. Mm-hmm. I did not want to walk dogs on the Upper East Side whose lives were better than mine.
Right.
That would have led to just some sort of can of worms that I didn't want to go down. but some of the jobs I've had over the years in New York have provided me with that type 2 fun. I was a stagehand for concerts, outdoor concerts, the Summer Stage series in Central Park. I would deconstruct stages after Black Eyed Peas, Red Hot Chili Peppers would play.
So cool.
And we would work, you know, you basically show up at 11:30 at night and you work until past dawn. And it's very physical work and there are really no breaks. But one night of that is rent for a month or two.
Wow.
So I did a bunch of those gigs and it brought me to some pretty incredible places in time. I remember Paul McCartney played Yankee Stadium in the first year of the new Yankee Stadium. Not a Yankees fan, but I think it was either 2015 or 2016. I can't remember which one, but it's the first year. And our breakfast were, you know, deli sandwiches at 5 a.m. But sitting in center field.
Pastrami.
Yes, exactly. Young. Breakfast of champions.
Corned beef.
Sitting in center field of Yankee Stadium as the sun rises and it's quiet and there's no one in the stands at dawn. How many diehard Yankee fans would kill for that moment?
Right.
I got to experience it. And get paid to do so.
Yeah.
I worked the Coney Island hot dog eating contest for 4 or 5 years.
That's wild.
Non-consecutively. I knew the sound guy there, and I would be his assistant for it, and it was absolutely wild. It's a lot of work that goes in, and they don't start loading in until about 18 hours before the entire thing, and then ESPN and NBC and everyone rolls their trucks in and takes over an hour before the actual 10-minute competition. But I did that for about 4 or 5 years, on and off over a course of 6 years. I was an audition monitor, which I loved. That was finally Joy doing casting, and Joy is now out in California. But when she had her casting company in New York, I started as an audition monitor, lining people up. And then they said, well, you know, do you want to read? And I said, absolutely. And so I got to be in the room, and that's something that everyone should try to do. I tried to do it at other places, but no one was as kind as Joy was.
Wow.
And let me, you know, these were callbacks. These were final callbacks. I wasn't just sitting at a chair. These are roles I'd never go in for. They would be casting Mamma Mia, or they would be casting stuff that I would not go in for. And yet I was up there with these actresses in the final callbacks. Everyone's off book. The music's going. It's not like a simple, you know, scene and you're still holding the piece of paper. This was legit.
Yeah.
And that is invaluable to an actor, to understand not just the actress's process and how other actors prepare for a final callback, but to also see how the creative team, when everyone's in the room, how they go about deliberating who will move on to the next level. And then the last job I had in New York before the pandemic was selling merchandise in the Broadway theaters. I worked for the company Araka, and I started in 2016 or 17. I can't remember. And it was great because at any time we had between 6 and 14 accounts, which just means shows on Broadway. And I got to see Come From Away, and I got to see Beetlejuice and The Humans. And there were so many shows over the years. Mel Brooks, his stint, I think that was at the Lyceum. I can't remember. They do all blur together. The Book of Mormon. You get to see them for free, most of them. Wicked was the show that kept the lights on, basically. Yeah. And so I was there the most, and it was a perfect job. It didn't pay super well, but I had my days free to audition.
Mm-hmm.
When there was an audition.
Sure,
but after 3 years of that and the pandemic hitting, and they furloughed all of us, and they said, no, Broadway will be back in 3 weeks. I thought, you don't just shut down a billion-dollar industry for 3 weeks and pick it back up.
Right.
And when they furloughed us, I said, that is the kick in the butt I needed to not go back to a cushy job. Again, the pay wasn't great, but it was so easy. And I had gotten into that autopilot mode that New York can let you fall into that trap of.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So, yes, it's, you know, you say, speaking of auditions when there are any, and then we, you know, hit the pandemic and there are none, literally. And they're starting to, you know, build back, which is great. But we have those brains where you said something earlier that I disagree with. You said that you're lazy, and I don't agree with that. I've seen you work, and I've seen you have goal. Like, I do not think you're lazy. You're also extremely educated and smart. Like, you can wrap off facts that you're also the best tour guide. Whenever someone asks about you or whatever, I'm always like, Josh is also the best tour guide because he knows every fact about a random like boulder on the sidewalk, and I'll be like, that boulder actually blah 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 tripped over, which led to the filming of the movie. But and I'm just like, how do you even know this? Also, why were they here?
If I had a Tinder, the bio would say a vast expanse of useless information,
and that I feel like that's the title of this podcast as well. So you started to create your own stuff and head out west. So talk to me through that journey. What was it like for you to literally know, like, you had to up and you had to change your location for you to start finding your version of success?
Exactly.
Because that's huge. That is a big thing to be like, I'm moving.
Yes. I never felt truly like a New Yorker. I'm a New Yorker in theory, in that I just get mad at everything here. But even true New Yorkers, I will say, true New Yorkers love their borough, love their city. They love to show tourists that they know exactly where they know how to get them someplace. But I would get angry here. The elbows would come up in the subway. I would try to teach etiquette by, you know, ramming people out as they're trying to enter the subway.
Yeah.
And without fail, every month I would get sick. That's just what New York does to me.
Yeah.
So when the pandemic hit, I left the city, and I grew up in Connecticut. So I went back up to my parents' house in Connecticut, and I stewed for about 3 weeks on the unemployment website. Mm-hmm. I went for walks, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. It's not like I was in rehearsals for a Broadway show, and it was taken away from me.
Right.
I think I would have quit the business if that happened to me. I do not have that mental fortitude.
Well, clients have come in and they're like, yeah, I'm you know, a senior in college. I'm like, why?
Yes, exactly.
Why are you in college? Wait until it comes back. Like, yes. I don't know about you, but I would have left. I would have said, I will come back. I'm deferring. I'll come back when college is ready. If I hadn't already established a career myself.
Yes.
Because, sorry, it's just all about, college is about experience.
Yes.
Not about Zoom. It's about experience.
Zoom
anyway.
Fatigue. Yes, exactly. So I was wondering what was next for me, because clearly for someone without a creative job in New York at the time, it was going to be a while before any came around again.
Right.
And so I decided to move to Los Angeles, where I was born, where I've spent seasons on and off for the last 7 or 8 years trying to make it work. We were told in college during our a panel with a professional, they said, you're only the new kid in town once. And I disagree with that. You're the new kid in town every 6 months because everyone has a short memory. So I would go to LA in like the fall, winter, stay there for the fall TV season and pilot season. I would leave. I'd come back here for like the summer auditions and like summer stock and regional theater. And then I'd go back to LA and they'd be like, oh, you're from New York. It's like, yes, we've met like several times before.
We've literally had dinner together.
Yes, exactly.
How many times have I literally bombed at Chelsea and then I get an audition the next week where I'm thinking, oh, my career's over.
Exactly. You know, exactly. So I made the decision. I said, I will never, it's much like what you just said about college. Why are you there? It said, well, I won't have a better opportunity than right now to try Los Angeles long term. The television and film, while less than moderately successful in New York, theater a little bit more so. I was like, let's try something new. I'm only 29, 30 once. Let me try Los Angeles for a long period of time. And just coupled with the danger, the excitement, the fear of what I did is packed up my car and my life into that car and moved across the country. The fear that comes with that drove and fueled this desire to be creative in a way that I had become lackadaisical in my for now jobs
right.
in the past. And so while right before I moved to LA, I'd been ruminating on an idea of how to be creative while at home in the pandemic. And it's okay if I'm creative at home in the pandemic, but how can I incorporate other people when we can't leave our houses?
Yeah.
So I came up with an idea. It's not quite esoteric, but it's definitely for a niche audience. But the project I've been working on since November, December of 2020, up through our debut on Christmas Day of this year, 2021, is a project I'm calling Radio Play Revival, where I am reviving the radio drama format. Unfortunately, it's on a podcast. Nothing against podcasts, but it would be great if there was radio that people tuned into, you know?
It's true.
It's just, the podcasts fascinate me. The fact that we're acting like this is live, and people, you won't edit it until days from now, and people won't listen to it until weeks from now.
Right.
It's just, the whole thing is fascinating to me. And you listen to wackadoos like me just go down a path that I don't know where it's going to end up. But that's what this platform is on, Radio Play Revival. And, you know, not just to thumb my nose at some of my experiences, but I've been told before, oh, you know, you were great, but that we went with a Tony-nominated actor instead.
Right.
Or, you know, there's this British guy, he's great, it's an American play. It's just like, okay, well, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
And this country does fetishize the Brits and the Aussies a good amount. So I said, this project is American actors performing American works of literature. So if you were born in this country, you're in, basically. And we're going to celebrate the great writers of this country. And I told my managers about it, and they said, that's great. Good luck. And I thought, well, at first I thought, oh, you're not going to help me. You can produce as well. And then I thought, no one's stopping me from doing this. And all the little tools I've picked up over the last decade of being out of college, all the little things I did in college as side hustles, I was the guy in college with the video camera. And I would record other students' self-tapes for summer stock and all that stuff.
Yes,
and,
you were.
And I would edit that. And so I hope they were satisfied with their tapes then. But that was me, what you were doing back then, learning the camera. Mm-hmm. And little did we know that, like, that's what we would need a decade down the road.
Yeah.
But every little self-taught lesson of how to work a camera, how to work an Adobe program more proficiently than we could work it yesterday, has been beneficial. Because I said, well, it's going to be hard to get so many people in a room. Why don't I just do just about everything? I have a co-producer, Stacey Levine, who is president and CEO of Groundswell Theatricals, who handles paperwork. She handles contracts. She handles now creative ideas as well, contacts in the theater world. And I basically am on the other end, picking stories, thinking of actors, recording them, editing it, well, cutting it together, and then sending it off to an editor. That's three people. Mm-hmm. And then we have a production assistant who's on book for most of the works. I'm reading the cue lines for the other actors.
Wow.
And there are essentially 4 to 5 of us. We hired a casting director who was fantastic in season one. When I went to him, Dave Caparelliotis, Dave Cap, and I said, you know, my interpretation of this story is, despite it being a young couple, I see them as an older couple. And it would be great if they were married. And it's the episode that premiered on Christmas Day. It's The Gift of the Magi, which is a Christmas story. And he came up with the idea. He said, you know, Samuel L. Jackson and LaTanya Richardson Jackson. How about that? And we got them.
It's wild.
That was episode one. And from there, I told my managers, I basically said, you know, if actors are like me, and I'm going to ping pong it back to you, and we're a little bit lazy by nature, and I say that we will ship you the recording gear. You don't need to get out of your pajamas. You get paid for about an hour's worth of work, and you don't need to memorize it. It's all on paper. Almost everyone, Michael, said yes.
Yeah.
And the talent that this project, born out of the pandemic, out of a necessity for creative survival, has elicited is unbelievable. We started with Keith David reading The Gift of the Magi, which premiered on Christmas Day, and we'll release one episode a week every Saturday for 8 weeks, and it takes about a year to make 8 episodes. Episode 2 features the incomparable 4-time Tony winner Boyd Gaines.
Wow.
Narrating my favorite short story of all time, An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, featuring another actor, a Dear Multi-Hyphenate veteran himself, Ryan Mack.
Yes.
As the protagonist of that story.
Currently on the Wicked Tour under Setting Fiero. Wait. And gets to say the iconic line, "Look, it's Linda!"
Which I'm sure he kills every night.
Yes, I'm sure he does.
Episode 3 doesn't slow the momentum at all. It's Michael Urie and Jessica Chastain. I should say Jessica Chastain first. She is narrating The Yellow Wallpaper.
That's
and
wild.
Going insane over 40 minutes of incredible, incredible early feminist writing.
Wow.
When they didn't know how to deal with what we believe to be postpartum depression.
Wow.
It doesn't stop there. You know, the talent that said yes, from Stephen McKinley Henderson to John Benjamin Hickey, and I'm going to forget so many people, to my friends, the talented people that have been in works of mine that have never even seen the light of day. Ryan, Catherine Allison, currently in Company on Broadway. Kelly Fairbrother, a college classmate of ours. Mm-hmm. I'm forgetting so many others. A good friend of mine, I paired Marilyn Caserta, with Jarrell Jerome for two John Patrick Shanley plays. Wow. The idea being two actors in rep, and I'm quoting here on this audio platform, two actors in rep playing two different characters in two different John Patrick Shanley one acts.
Wow.
And what did the man himself say when we approached him and said, we're looking to, you know, do this series? He himself said, have fun.
Wow.
People are, I think there's a group of people that are craving work like this, and I'm happy to produce it because I needed something to do, and I'm so grateful that it got me back into literature. Mm-hmm. It got me into new mediums I've never really explored before. Producing is tough. Dear Multi-Hyphenate, that's for me a professional Googler. I have learned everything that I am a hyphenate in by Googling it and not just slapping it together, but by taking time over years and years and becoming as proficient as I can in those skills, so that when something comes out, I'm proud of it. The same way you are with every single project you do. It, for me, though, I was in a rut because I had lost a job and I did not have an acting job to fall back on. And I say I'm good for like one good idea a year, and thank God I thought of it in like March and not November, basically.
Well, I think it's a really cool idea. You know, there was this immediate reaction when you said this an American thing. And then I was like, I literally was like, oh God, it's all American. And then I got nervous for a second. We also have so many things to fix within our own self. And I think there are so many incredible lessons in these plays, in these American works, that by looking at them with an eye of today, well, like you just said about Jessica Chastain and The Yellow Wallpaper, just like that is probably about what we now know as postpartum depression. It's like there are so many things that have been written that were written off at the time that it was written, but today we have a clear eye. And who can that help? As an American, can that help that has never paid attention to those lessons before? And I think today, more than ever, your project is needed more than ever.
I think you're right there. I mean, Charlotte Perkins Gilman, who wrote The Yellow Wallpaper, has a brilliant use of irony in that short story. The narrator's husband is a physician. He is a doctor, and he can't even diagnose his own wife. We have come so far in the 100+ years since that short story of being empathetic, being open. Well, a long time ago, we used to be at the forefront of worldwide culture. If we exported our culture instead of bombs, we would be in a much better place.
Right.
There's a lot, as you said, that needs to be solved that doesn't take place behind a keyboard or behind a microphone like this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not looking to change the world, because if I was, I would actually start a campaign to get Native American reservations clean drinking water.
All right.
But who put this soapbox under me as I'm talking about this? But
speaking of burnout jobs, remember I worked at a soap store.
That's so right. Yes,
I gotta have a stock in the back somewhere.
But you know, my point to that is. I'm not trying to make a statement. I'm trying to celebrate American literature with great American talent. And if more people can understand a story about postpartum depression, or if more people can understand a story about a Latino actor and a Latina actress performing two John Patrick Shanley plays about young children falling in love, written by someone who has a mastery of the English language in his words, if people can connect to that, if they can listen to a story about New Orleans in the 1890s, but not the New Orleans we think of bright colors and Carnival and Mardi Gras, but of the other side of the tracks, of a poor black family.
Right.
And a young boy who's 9 years old, who is doing nothing but the right thing. They're tales of morality. They're tales of what made this country. Well, they're tales of what made this country, and by a product of that, Hollywood and American playwrights develop the genres of performing. An occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, episode number 2, sort of invented the mold for the unreliable narrator. And it was written in the 1800s.
Wow.
So it's, I'm not just throwing darts at a dartboard and picking stories at random. I'm starting with, again, what I know. Mm-hmm. And those are from great English teachers I've had both in college and back in high school, and to a degree back in elementary school. And starting there. And it's been really nice to see already people have been emailing the email address associated with the site saying, you know, I'd love to be a part of this, wow. You know, and, you know, playwrights, short story writers, contemporary short story writers saying, you know, this is a great project, you know, and I say, send me your stuff because we need more voices out there. I'm faking my way through having a long catalog of stories at the moment, but stories that can depict America, not just the two coasts, but from coast to coast. Is what I'm aiming for.
That's amazing. So as a producer, you know, the other night we just watched the Kennedy Center Honors, and when Lorne Michaels was getting honored, I think it was Kevin Nealon that was on stage, and he said, for those of you that are wondering what a producer does, first, just turn around and look at Lorne Michaels. Beat. That's what a producer does. So what, in your eyes, does a producer do? How did you get the equipment to your artists? How are you financing this? What, in your eyes, does a producer do in a certain project like this?
I'm smiling right now. A producer, this is going to sound crazy, but think about it. A producer produces.
Exactly.
They don't just make money.
Right.
A producer produces. I will say it again. That means, as a producer, I got the equipment. I assembled, I contributed to the assembling of the talent. I scheduled everything with the production assistant. I will take the correct cuts. So no actors performed together because it's not sort of, Michael and I are recording on a table right now opposite each other. And this is even different for you.
Yeah.
You normally record.
It's been a year and a half since I've seen someone across a mic like this.
I require my actors to do a minimum of 3 takes each of each line.
Wow.
Because we got to make sure some heater's not going or some horn isn't honking or anything like that.
Right.
So you have 3 takes by each actor of each line in each episode. My job as a producer / director is, when I record the next actor, is to keep the second actor in the same world as the first actor. And then when you do an episode like Zingu, which features everyone from Michelle Williams to Anna Deavere Smith to Eva Marie Saint. I mean, I just, that's like one of my first crushes.
It's amazing.
But a Hitchcock girl is now in one of my radio plays. It's staggering, really. But when you get to the 8th actor and you're trying to keep them in the same world as the first actor, you are producing a story, basically. You are keeping together the web of interpretations in the same universe. So is that the easiest way to do it? Probably not. Mm-hmm. Am I stubborn? Absolutely.
Yes,
that's the way I'm going to do season 2 as well.
You better believe you're stubborn.
But a producer produces. A producer spends hours up late at night Googling how to get a podcast onto a podcast platform, how to think of advertising, how to
succeed in business without really trying.
Yes, what? Or try a lot. Yes. and I thought of Bobby Morris for something.
Cool.
Yes.
I love him.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. He does not know about this. Breaking news. I've
you
thought
heard
of him.
It here,
I've
folks.
Thought of him for an episode. No, a producer does everything within their power, I think, to keep their project alive. That is lending a hand wherever it is needed. Mm-hmm. You're always on call, basically. You're always seeing if there's a squeaky wheel. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'm not proficient in some things. We've established dancing and singing, but some of it is paperwork. And the first person I called was Stacey Levine, and I said, every contract I've ever made for SAG to shoot a short film, I have mostly fudged my way through.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just get in the way. So the unions just get in the way, and they want 2.5%.
Right.
So I said, Stacey, this has to be done correct. If we're going to go out to the talent we're going out to. And so everything is done by the book for this. And that is, you could say that's the producer in me thinking, I can't produce this, but I know someone who can and who is proficient and who has professional experience in doing so. And so a producer surrounds themselves with people that want to make art for art's sake, make their project because they like the idea. And so many actors have said, this is what I studied. This is what I studied at Juilliard. Mm-hmm. This is what I studied at whatever college or whatever conservatory they went to. And they said, man, I haven't done this in a long time. I had an actor in one of our final episodes. He said, when your casting director approached me with a play, he said, I cried. He's been bulking up for a couple years, trying to get into this. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen a single one, but like the Marvel universe.
Right.
And I'm not saying our dialogue is better. I'm just saying that he said, I'm so glad someone thinks of me that way, that I can do a play and not spew expositional dialogue.
Right.
And that meant a lot to me because for the first time in my professional career, I had that. You can call it power. I had that power to give someone exactly what they wanted. And that was really nice to hear because I've been checking my work at every turn on this project. It's been a colossal undertaking, but what a time to do it. I had nothing else holding me back to do so. And if I can give those people that opportunity, even for a couple hours in a day, in a full year, I am so grateful that my idea has provided that for them.
I'm obsessed with that, Josh. I love that. Where can we find you on social media?
You can't.
Right, I knew that.
We were living together when I got rid of Facebook, so that was 2010.
Literally, I could tell you the profile picture I had when you got rid of Facebook, and it was the one where I turned myself into a Pokemon card.
Oh, yeah.
That's, yeah.
Well, that was the very first, probably, season that we were like, hey, these meme things, we can meme ourselves.
Right.
Like, yeah. Who knew that they would be as big as they were, but we started memeing ourselves, basically.
It's amazing.
No, I got rid of all social media, and I got hours of my day back. It was wonderful. So, you can't find me on social media. You really can't. I don't even have one of those burner accounts to, like, drum up good news. I don't have any interest in that. So you can't find me, but for my latest, and I got rid of my website too. I was like, why am I spending money on this? I'm spending $152 on something that like Wix, no free ads. Wix said like, oh, you're getting like 9 people a month visiting your set. I was like, sick, I'm sitting at home. So like, what's that doing for either of us?
Literally.
Yeah. The less time I can spend on my glowing rectangles, the better. Because you spend all day with your little glowing rectangle, and then you type on your medium-sized glowing rectangle, and you wind down by turning on your big glowing rectangle. So the less time I spend on all of those, the happier I am. But you can find my latest project, my first foray into directing and producing. And hey, spoiler, it's pretty freaking exciting to do that stuff. You can find the project anywhere you find podcasts. And the title of the piece is Radio Play Revival. And you can go to radioplayrevival.com to see our season one cast list, to read the bios of all 8 episodes. And on every page, we shove it down your throat. Click here for Spotify. Click here for Apple. Click here for 1,000 other podcast platforms I've never even heard of. But you can find it anywhere on our website, radioplayrevival.com. Or you could just go into your little mini glowing rectangle and search for it on Spotify or Apple or anywhere. And please subscribe and smash that subscribe button.
Smash that subscribe button.
Tell your mom, tell the boys, tell your friends. and, you know, I hope that out of it, if you're going on a camping trip with your friends and you want a scary story, that you tune into The Yellow Wallpaper or you tune into episode 1 of season 2 that I'm recording now. If you want to gather around in the holiday time and listen to the dulcet tones of Keith David, Samuel L. Jackson, LaTanya Richardson Jackson, and Catherine Allison, you tune in and sit together as a family and enjoy that. If you're on your commute, if you're having trouble falling asleep, they're top-notch actors performing. I did nothing. I directed these people. That just means I kept them in the same world. These are top-notch actors performing top-notch literature in a spoken format. And I didn't shove down some like sound effects down your throat either. They're having fun and letting the words do the work. And it really is something special.
I'm so glad that you joined me today, Josh. Thank you for being on this episode. And I can't wait for us to have another episode together. And you're the best. And it's always so good to see you and, of course, talk to you because it's always a very stimulating conversation.
I'll see you in 5 years when I resurface again.
Yeah, see you in 5 years. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Broadway Podcast Network, Alan, Dory, Katie, Yo, you are all incredible. And as always, follow at DearMulti-It on Instagram or go to DearMulti-It.com. And if you want to share your story on the podcast on Dear Multi-It, please email me at DearMulti-It@gmail.com or submit on the website DearMulti-It.com. As always, subscribe, comment, like, do all what you got to do, what Josh said, tell your mom, tell your boys, tell your whatever, tell your science teacher. Get involved. Can't wait to tell you more about the book, all that jazz. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day.
Bye, goodbye. Everyone.
Bye.
Love you, Michael.
Love you too, Joshy.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.